As a listener of this podcast, you know the devastating impact of narcissistic abuse, how it shatters your confidence, leaving you struggling in future relationships. But it doesn't need to be that way. Join me and experts Lisa Sunny and Rosanna Fay at the Strong and Unstoppable Retreat this October in beautiful Orlando, Florida. During this transformative four-day experience, you'll uncover the unconscious psychological blocks holding your recovery back. Through equine therapy, targeted workshops, and practical skill development, you'll uncover and overcome unconscious obstacles and reconnect with your inner strength. This retreat is specifically designed for women who are committed to their healing and ready to break free from the lingering effects of narcissistic abuse. Space is limited and spots are filling up, so don't miss this opportunity to invest in yourself and your future. Secure your spot by visiting wellnessrecoveryretreats.com. That's wellnessrecoveryretreats. Take your first step towards becoming strong and unstoppable today.
Could your relationship be making you sick? For many of us who are in toxic relationships, we find ourselves dealing with more illnesses than we are when we're not in those relationships. In today's episode, Lisa and I talk about, could your relationship be making you sick, and how to assess if that might be happening and what to do to start carving out that time for yourself.
Thank you for joining me on Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse. I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a mental health specialist with over 20 years of counseling experience. Each week, I will take a vulnerable look at the nitty-gritty details of narcissistic abuse, at the underlying dynamics that make these relationships so challenging. This is a listener-supported podcast, so thank you for considering becoming a sponsor for less than the cost of a cup of coffee. Around Christmas, I ended up getting super sick, so sick that I had to be put on a huge regimen of antibiotics. I don't talk about this a lot, but I'm one of these fussy people, has a huge list of allergies, and I also have a lot of GI issues. And everybody knows antibiotics is not good for your digestive system. So I want to do a shout out to our sponsor. A big thank you, GetTheTea.com. They sent me Calm Tummy, and it's been fabulous. I'm like very aware when I'm struggling and when I'm not struggling. And I have to say, I'm not on medications for GI upsetness, and I'm doing really well. I've been so pleased with Calm Tummy. So I just want to thank Get the Tea for being our sponsor, for believing in this cause, and also for helping my health.
In my toxic, abusive, narcissistic relationship, I often found myself getting ill. It was pretty common that I would often be going to the doctor. And I remember my ex telling me that he thought I was a hypochondriac, but then I would always get diagnosed with something like strep bronchitis. Like, I just felt like I was always constantly sick. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until Carrie and I were chatting about the abuse cycle and abuse's impact on our physical body that we started realizing and looking at the research for how abuse and the stress and high cortisol levels of stress can start to have detrimental effects on our physical self, on our immune system, on our body. I've talked with multiple clients, followers who have had debilitating, chronic, sometimes fatal illnesses, and they all believe and see that it's definitely connected to their situation in their relationship and how I've had so many clients, honestly, who have autoimmune disorders, and that those did not start and were not then diagnosed until after they were in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And I know for myself, when I was in the narcissistic relationship, is that I just didn't do very well taking care of myself. I struggled with higher blood pressure and poor diet, and that can definitely affect it.
And I've seen anything from, you know, anxiety to cancer be sort of something that my clients and I have discussed. Not to say that narcissism or narcissistic abusive relationships cause cancer, but all of the hair loss, anxiety, depression, as you said, autoimmune disorders, I see that so frequently. And I didn't really even know about that. I'd seen it online, but I was like, I didn't experience that. Have you ever compartmentalized something so much that all of a sudden you have your aha moment? Oh, wait, yes, I did. Two things that really affected me, and one much more significantly, was anxiety. And I'm a person who, you know, I've always thought good for the people who do therapy, but it was never my thing. At this point, I've done such a 180. Therapy is for everyone. It's the most amazing, life-changing thing, talking to someone. But I wasn't that person then. And I remember talking to my doctor, medical doctor, when I was pregnant with my first son. And I said, I have this feeling. I can't describe it. It's like a tightness or like, not like I can't breathe. It's not a panic thing, but like I, there's this feeling. And I was describing it to him and he was like, oh, that's anxiety. And I was like, anxiety? Mm-hmm. I don't have. And I realized I'd been experiencing it for a couple of years when I really started to track it with my doctor, the years that I had been in this relationship. I didn't tie it to the relationship at that moment, but I had to go on medication for it. And I really realized when I got out of the relationship, I wondered if I could go off and not take this medication anymore. And I weaned myself off of it. And shocker, anxiety is primarily gone. I mean, in terms of needing medication every day, I was struggling with hair loss. He would always make these comments about how my hair was everywhere, all over the floor. And I never made the connection to that being something relatively new, that I had never experienced that really more than the average woman, I suppose, that loses some in life. But it was really hard for me to come to grips with the fact that this relationship was likely the cause. But I see it with clients all the time. These physical manifestations of the abuse-related stress and trauma that cause it. We don't necessarily see it when we're in it.
I think it's a good point that you brought up depression and anxiety, because that reminded me that when my ex and I were in couples therapy, which we were in couples therapy for years, but near the end of that relationship, after I discovered drugs in the house and that he had embezzled from his job, and that after my second miscarriage, we were in couples therapy, and our therapist at the time had suggested, now mind you, she was not a professional that could have medicated me, but she had suggested that I get on an antidepressant, anti-anxiety medication, which I had gotten on. And then I'd been on it for a couple months. And then we came back to a session and she turned to me. So you've been taking the medicine for a couple months. How's it going? And I said, it's okay. She turned to my now ex and said, do you think she needs to be put on more? And it was this like light bulb moment for me of this person is suggesting that the only way I can be in and tolerate this relationship is if I am more medicated. And it just was this light bulb moment of like, I cannot continue to be in a relationship where the only way I can handle it, tolerate it, is if I am medicated. Like that goes back to like lobotomies, like for poor women, you know? And I was like, that was literally, I ended up leaving my then husband just a few days later. Like it just was, it was a turning point for me of like, I cannot continue to remain in a relationship that is so unacceptable to me and is so extremely abusive and unhappy if I have to remain medicated. And I too found myself not really needing the medication after I left that relationship. When I could go to my own house alone and not be in that relationship, I felt so much safer mm-hmm. than I'd ever had sharing a bed with him.
Yeah.
And that was an amazing change for me. It really showed me, because I had no idea in the moment, like I just thought it was life stuff. It's yeah. like, oh, life's harder. We have kids. I have a job. That's why I have so much stress, depression, and anxiety. That's the issue. Mm-hmm. No, the issue is with I was literally living with an abuser, and you cannot ever feel safe with an abuser. There were never moments that I felt truly safe in that relationship. I thought I did, but having actually experienced a safe, healthy relationship, it was nothing. It was really just the calm before the storm, just a moment of no tension, which were always extremely brief. And I think that's a really good thing to take stock of, is how are you doing physically? Mm-hmm. How are you in this relationship? Do you find yourself getting unhealthy for whatever reason, getting more and more sick? Have you had any illnesses that have come up? And sort of thinking about, did I have these before I was in this relationship? Is there a chance that the stress, anxiety of this particular relationship and what's occurring in it, could that have an impact?
And it's important, I think, to answer that question carefully to one's mm-hmm. self, because we're so quick to dismiss, it can't be. Hold on. Could we just stop for a moment? Just really consider it instead of dismissing it. Maybe let's consider it and then dismiss it, but let's consider it first. What is the possibility? Could it be possible? If the answer is yes, which it, let's be honest, the answer is yes, it could be. Let's explore further. When did this start? When did you start feeling this way? Who have you talked to about feeling this way? Whether it's a psychiatrist, psychologist, therapist, medical doctor, your mom. But when has this really started to become an issue? And I know everyone knows this book, but The Body Keeps Score, phenomenal book. Mm-hmm. So I will say to people, in my opinion, it's sort of a clinical, it's a heavy book to read, but it's such a good book regardless. It really helps you understand the connection between your body and your experiences, your trauma, what's happening to you in your life. And also not to ask your abusive partner if they think it's being caused by them, because the answer is no in their mind, right? They're always going to say you're doing it to yourself. It's psychosomatic. You're a hypochondriac. You're making it up. It's interesting, actually, when I got diagnosed with anxiety, he told me that it was because, and I didn't say that it was him. I actually thought it was work. And he was like, no, it's my mom, his mom, for clarity, that my relationship with her was so damaged and so toxic that the anxiety was coming up whenever we would go visit his parents. And to be fair, absolutely, it was a little bit not caused by, but it actually, he blamed her. It was him. He created this triangulation between her and I, which was the center of why she and I didn't get along from the beginning. The things that he told me that she had done to him, which from my understanding, most are not true. I mean, maybe some, but it really painted this picture that she was awful. I'm sure he was doing the same thing. I have some evidence to support that he was doing the same thing. So he created this awful dynamic and then blames her for my anxiety that he's causing. And I think he kind of enjoyed that diagnosis of like, now you're a problem. And when we would argue after that, did you take your pill? Are you medicated? Go take your anxiety meds and calm down. You know, and it's not like, I'm not up on all medications, but it's not the one that you take when you feel anxious. It's the one you take daily to sort of level you out. So I couldn't just run off and take a pill. And even then, to what you said, I feel like what he was really saying is, in order for you to be in this relationship, you need to be medicated. When we argue, you need medication. When you have a problem, you need medication. It always became this thing that he used against me. Meanwhile, what created it was my being in that relationship. It was my participation in this toxic, abusive, codependent cycle that made me need something to kind of regulate. And whether you're medicating with prescribed medication, or you're suffering from some kind of illness, or you're self-medicating with alcohol or drugs or whatever to get yourself through it, do you need that kind of support, I'm using that word kind of in a cheeky way, to stay in the relationship? Because if you can't be you, and you're experiencing anxiety, depression, other illnesses, is this healthy, physically healthy? No, absolutely not. Mm-hmm.
I've had multiple male clients throughout the years who have had extremely serious health conditions that they saw improved when they left those unhealthy relationships. And I think it's important to point out, because so many men do not seek medical help, doctor's help, but I've had multiple male clients who have struggled with high blood pressure, high cholesterol, stress-related heart attacks, pretty severe and scary things that can happen that were surprisingly lessened when they finally left those unhealthy, toxic relationships. I worked with one client who talked about whenever he went home, he would be constantly screamed at. And so he would work harder. Well, yeah, like it's going to be exhausting and hard and stressful if you're working harder. And so he thought too, it was work. But I remember he and I had a conversation where I was like, when do you feel it the most? When do you feel the anxiety, the stress the most? Is it when you're at work, when you're working longer hours, or is it when you're driving home? And that's something that I absolutely experienced with my unhealthy relationship, is my stress and anxiety. And I had a very high stress job for years when I was in that marriage, but my anxiety was through the roof driving home. I was filled with dread, fear. You know, I would find myself parking my car in the garage and then sitting there trying to like take some deep breaths, finish listening to an audiobook or a podcast, anything to try to regulate myself, which really honestly felt impossible. Like, how do you regulate yourself for something that you don't even know is going to happen or not? And it's so unpredictable and you don't know how big or small it's going to be. Like, I did not feel excited, happy, safe going home. I just didn't, you know?
I had the exact same. Yeah. I would listen to music, uplifting, empowered, fun, you know, trying to listen to music that made me feel good, but I would pull into the driveway and just like this big deep breath. I will say I had the benefit of he usually wasn't home. We worked opposite schedules. So often I would come home and it was peaceful. But when I knew he was home, I mean, I could go to the grocery store knowing he was home, come back and still have that same feeling of like, oh, you know, he's not going to help me bring the bags in. He's not going to be kind. He's going to criticize how much I spent, what I got, what I didn't get. I was always waiting for the next argument. So how do you regulate when you are in constant anticipation and you never know? You never know if it's going to be good or bad today. So you start trying to kind of assess what version of them you're going to be dealing with. That creates anxiety. So even if you're not diagnosed with it, which I think a lot of people don't know to get diagnosed, and even then what to do about it, what to do really to leave, of course, but if only it were that easy to just realize that the anxiety or the autoimmune diseases are related to the relationship and off you go. But I wish it was that easy. I wish.
Right. Yeah, I know. I know. And I think that's just something for a lot of us finding out that we have these health conditions. It's also just really easy to just dismiss them or say that they're not that big of a deal. But I think one of the things that absolutely goes first when we're in these unhealthy relationships is caring for ourselves. And that's something to always look at and evaluate, is that I was so hyper-focused on keeping my ex happy at any cost that that meant that I often didn't eat or sleep well. I didn't attend the doctor regularly. And I found that when I would make those attempts to take care of myself, going to the gym more often or that kind of thing, I would often really hear these belittling, demeaning phrases like, why do you need to go? Or like, it's not working well enough. It was always just, everything just felt like a battle. Even just taking care of myself felt like a battle. And in a healthy relationship, someone is going to encourage you to be the best version of yourself. Like my husband, if I say I'm going to do a diet, he's like, great, what is it? Like, I'll see if I can, you know, do it with you. Or like, let's go to the gym together. Like, he's so encouraging of me doing those things for myself. My ex saw those things as a threat. Mm-hmm. Whatever it was, it was a threat. It was a threat to him. It was a threat to the relationship. It wasn't okay. I remember he even pushed back initially to me getting anxiety medication. You know, you don't need medicine, because I think he believed probably that I would be more manageable for him if I wasn't regulated. And that's what narcissists do, is they want us unregulated because that way they can get that emotional supply off of us.
Yep.
You know, but then I chose anyway to get on the medication, but then I needed to be on more. So like whatever I did wasn't okay.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what it was. And I know you've experienced that and you've experienced that with clients too. But I think that can be one self-help tip that we offer to the audience. Start making some choices to look at and evaluate yourself and prioritize yourself and your physical health and see what happens. You know, really evaluate kind of your person's response to you and what they say and how they react and respond, and start carving out some boundaries around that. That very simple boundary is, if I'm going to go to the gym 3 days a week, that means I need that time to go. It's a simple time boundary. Like, I need that time to go. And that means other things need to be accommodated, and see if there's any sabotaging. Mm-hmm. See what things are done in reaction to that.
Yeah. If they're sort of preventing you from going, which can look different, right? Obviously the overt, right. Like, no, you can't go tonight, even though we agreed that you could. But even much more covert is like, well, who's going to make dinner? And fine, but when you get back, you still have to ABC, making you feel like you're trying to fit more in to the same number of hours that we've always had. That can be really hard. Or negative comments, if like taking going to the gym as the example, devaluing you. Yeah, you really need the gym. Or making comments that are not supportive. Because I think a lot of these really sneaky types can make you feel like they're supporting you, but they're really not. They're really trying to covertly punish you and make you feel bad. Even flipping it on you a bit, like, who are you going to the gym for? Why are you wearing that to the gym? So you're wearing spandex. Mm-hmm. Nice. You just want everybody to look at your butt. I remember, and I'm not a gym goer, but if I would, on certain days, wear makeup. Now, I wear makeup all the time because I enjoy the act of putting it on. I like it. But sometimes he would make a thing of like, well, why are you wearing more makeup. What more? I'm wearing the same that I wear every day. But it's a comment to make you feel like you need to behave differently to get their approval or to avoid an argument. If you're feeling like when you're trying to better yourself, spend time, because I think, you know, self-care, people talk about that and everyone thinks like manicures, bubble baths, going to the gym, but also just Netflix, just chill out, read a book about nothing, sit with your friends, do something that makes you happy. Those are all acts of self-care. If you're punished for spending time with your friends or called lazy if you're staying home one night watching a movie, is there always a reaction that seems negative or seems to prevent you from caring for yourself? You need to question how this person is impacting your physical and mental well-being. But that's, again, it's so hard when you're in a trauma bond or in these toxic patterns. It's hard to break free from that thinking.
I was working with a client at one point who we were evaluating this. And so I suggested that she start documenting. So like you go to the gym 3 days a week, document your partner's reaction each time before you go to the gym. For example, when I was dealing with this with my ex, is that my ex would often start a fight with me before I would go to the gym. Mm-hmm. And that would be an easy way to sabotage because of course I'd want to stay and fix the fight, or I'd be so riled up that I wouldn't want to go to the gym and, you know, be crying at the gym. So there's those sabotaging behaviors as well. And those can often happen with any kind of situations. Your partner has a fight with you, or they have something dramatic going on right before you need to go, which can happen. And that's fine if it happens irregularly. But if it is happening every single time you're going to do this thing for yourself, or like you said, if you're suddenly being accused of being unfaithful or doing it for any other reason than your own self-care, like that can heighten that. I absolutely got comments like that of like, not necessarily about what I was wearing, but like, why are you going now? Is someone meeting you there? And to me, that was so
what?
I was like, I can't even think about anyone other than you because you're so overwhelming to me. I cannot think about anyone other than you. Like, why would you even think that? You know? Yeah,
you essentially forbid it.
But yeah. Right. So I don't have any brain space for these other people. Well, I mean, what are you even talking about? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would get comments like that too, where suddenly I am second guessing, why am I going? Or, you know, oh my God, I can't speak to anyone politely. Or am I doing anything that would be upsetting? And we would go to the gym together and someone might hit on me because, you know, here I am at the gym and that would somehow be my fault. Like I had somehow, for some reason, welcomed it or brought it on, even though it's just someone who approached me. And having to be mindful of those ways that can set us up to stop doing the things that are best for ourselves. Because when we think about open versus closed systems, which is often a scientific term, but in an open system, it is getting fed from the outside, from external forces. So it's if you think of a house, it's feeding in air from the outside versus just circulating the same air inside as in a closed system. When we are in these toxic, abusive, unhealthy relationships, those are closed system. It's not allowed for you to leave willingly or to bring other people in or to have your own autonomous being self, friendships, relationships outside of that relationship where they are not somehow in control. Mm-hmm. And the healthiest relationships allow us to come and go and do what's best for us. Because when we leave and go and do those things that are best for us, we come back to the relationship healthier, happier, better people. I know that I'm a better wife, a better parent when I go and do those things for myself. Mm-hmm. But I would have never thought that before because every time I did that, it came at such a cost that I didn't want to keep paying. Eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's honestly, going to the gym is too expensive. And I'm not talking about the cost of the gym membership, but it costs you your peace and your sanity. And again, it may not be the gym, but whatever you're trying to do to kind of better yourself. But I don't know, you know, I've seen so many conditions, I suppose, through working as a coach, stress, just the overall impact on your mental health in general, how we neglect ourselves. I've seen a lot of clients experience substance abuse problems because they're trying to self-medicate. And I have clients that are like, I drink normally or socially, and it's become a problem. I need wine to be intimate, or I need to drink or smoke or whatever to participate in this relationship. I need to kind of numb it out. I see a lot with alcohol specifically, trying to kind of self-medicate. My current partner had to leave a relationship. He had gotten sober and realized that the relationship that he was in, he couldn't stay sober. He got sober in it and then was like, I think I need the alcohol to be in this. And so it was either start drinking again or leave. And thankfully he chose leave, but I get that. That's, you know, what a decision to have to make, and to really realize that you're in something that requires you to alter your state just to be there. That's terrible, but that's, I don't think, something that's talked about enough, how we kind of self-medicate as a result of the abuse as well, which is a whole other topic, I suppose, on the subject of illnesses, but it's hard to organize.
It's hard. It's definitely an important one. I have 16 years clean, and my drug abuse started when I was 12, when my mom started hitting me with objects. And so when I was in trauma therapy, could absolutely see the connection between the abuse and when I started medicating, which was partly also because of the age I was and the access to it. But I wasn't medicated when I was in my toxic, abusive, narcissistic relationship. I met my ex-husband in a drug and alcohol recovery program. So we were both supposedly
right,
clean. And that wasn't the case. He never made it to his second year, and I have 16 years now. So, but I didn't know that. He was hiding his drug use for 8 years, the time that we were together. But I found myself medicating in other ways that were like, I worked. I mean, I was a workaholic. Absolutely. That was a way that's sort of more socially acceptable. But I see that often with clients too, is that I just got really, really busy with anything other than the relationship that I could take the focus off. Mm-hmm. So, but I saw it constantly as working, you know?
Same. I worked
and
like
so
a
I
dog.
Wasn't medicating. Yeah. And I think that's one that we need to talk about too, is that it can be substances. And that's easy to sort of minimize or excuse. When I was using a lot, I hung out with people who used a lot too. So it was easy to be like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. All my friends do it. We all do the same thing. There's this wine mom culture. Like, we all do it, you know? But my workaholism was a little bit different. And I see that a lot for my clients too, is that that's a break. Mm-hmm. Like, you can be driven by that excess. And that was the way that I ran while I was in that relationship, which wasn't healthy either, because stress, working long hours, not having rest. I did not learn how to rest until I left that relationship and couldn't do anything else. I just was so broken down that I had to finally take a rest. Yeah.
I recall a workaholic said this to me, that rest is productive. And we all have different versions of what that looks like, because I was sort of pointing out the irony of where the advice was coming from. But I didn't ever see it that way. It was, to me, very powerful. Just rest is productive. I had never considered that being alone and just reading a book was productive. It was like, I should be doing something else. I always had that feeling of I should be doing something else, which was very representative of his viewpoint, because my ex is a workaholic, and it was this environment of work, work, work. All you have to do is work. And if I was ever not working or cleaning or doing something for my job or my house or my family, I wasn't doing enough and I was being lazy. So it bred even further this culture that the world already has of working is okay, but you're neglecting your body and your mind. Stopping to read, stopping to take a walk, to spend time with friends, to paint your nails, go to the gym, whatever works for you. All of these acts of self-care are neglected. And then, of course, there's going to be huge impacts on our mental health and our physical health. And it can result in all of, you know, a plethora of different illnesses that we're not attributing to the relationship. So slowing down to actually see that the relationship could be causing it is really important.
Well, that's a wrap for this week's episode. Are you following me on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube? Find me at Carrie McAvoy, PhD. And whether you're in, consider leaving, or have left a narcissistic relationship, find community support at my Toxic Free Relationship Club. You can learn about this resource as well as others at CarrieMcAvoyPhD.com. And I'll see you back here next week.